This is Michael Deller, and we're going to be recording a tape for the archives of the Medicine Heights Historical Commission. Today's date is December 21st, 1985, and I have two guests with me here today, and I'll ask them to introduce themselves, starting with you, Bill.
Right. My name is Bill Huffman. I've lived in Madison Heights for the better part of 30-some years.
I'm Frank Cagle. I've lived in the city of Madison Heights now for the last 30 years.
I'm really pleased that you gentlemen can be with me here today. Both of you were here when we became a city, changed from the township into the city. And Bill, why don't you start and mention some of the things that you remember about how that change occurred?
My first recollection was being a young family man that had moved from Highland Park to then Royal Oak Township. Was a meeting asked to attend at the home of Virginia Salberg. And the participants were John McRina, Frank Cagle, Charlie Edwards, George Sargent, Darrell Davis, Richard Riley, recently deceased, and several others, Ted Krenn. And this was the nuclei of trying to incorporate an area of Royal Oak Township.
George Sargent.
Yes, I mentioned George. To try to incorporate into a municipality, because at that time the Royal Oak Township was divided basically between 8 Mile in Wyoming and 10 Mile, and the population resided up to about 11 Mile at that time. We found out we had no services, no police department, no fire department, and so we became interested. The main participants in the township at that time were the then township supervisor, George Horkey, who is still living today in Dundee, and former mayor Leroy Ainslie, who was on the township board and justice of the peace at that time. And so we had that coalition of a black and white township board trying to provide the services for 8 Mile in Wyoming and the 10 Mile John R. Respectively. As the population began to grow and spread, it was a concern on the part of many people that we had no library facilities, we had no public service facility. If you wanted your rubbish picked up, you had to call someone, and most of them threw it on John R. at that time, which was a mud road. But then the first meeting had developed, and if anyone could call the mother of Madison Heights, it would have to be Virginia Salberg. And the two main businessmen in that town at that time were Ralph Bryson and Jake Ancona. And they put up and Frank Cagle had a business at that time, and Darrell Davis. And I think they put up $20 apiece to form an incorporation and start proceeding with a charter. John McRina did most of the hard work, the petition drive. We were all involved in it one way or the other. And finally we acquired enough signatures to put it to a vote of the people to incorporate the city of Madison Heights. And incidentally the name was Madison, which was supplied by John McRina. And they went up to Lansing, of course, and we already had a Madison, so they had to name it Madison Heights. Some said it should have been named Madison Swamp at that time. But that was the original beginning, and then, of course, the matter was submitted to the people. The first council elected, the first mayor, was our good friend, and Lloyd Ferguson, who was an executive officer at that time with the Nash Calvinator Corporation. Frank Cagle, I think, was one of the first elected officials. George Sargent, Darrell Davis, Virginia Salberg, Ted Krenn, Charlie Edwards. I feel that I'm missing one. Joe Nosko, who is deceased, and Ted Przybylski, who is deceased, was one of the original people that was elected and nominated. The first council did not get to sit because of the first charter did not pass. And so then we had to have a new charter. I might point out that the present city attorney, Harry Young, and I and Les Katinsky, we all became friends at this point, and he was retained and did all of the work, legal work, for drafting of the charter and bringing the city into flourishing. A second proposition, I believe, is submitted, It passed, but was overturned in the court. And so the township board set for an extra year. And finally, the third charter was adopted, and the mayor and the council took office and at that time, and the city began to go into some services. Like most fledging first-run communities, the entire first mayor and council were turned out of office because they had to, people found out they had to pay for some of these services. So consequently, the township group that was in power prior to that were re-elected, and Mr. Harkin then became the second mayor. At that point in time, I think that I decided to run for office, and I was elected to the council at that time with them. Subsequently, of course, I think I served in as mayor the next time around, and then finally into the Lansing legislature. The old timers, then I'll be quite frank with you. A lot of people don't know that practically all of Hazel Park was known as the Trambush Farm, which the two ladies today own the farmhouse restaurant, and that was their farm. And basically, all of Madison Heights was divided into three farms and half of Warren. The Tesmer Farm, which ran basically from 10 Mile to 13 Mile, and from DeQuinder to Ryan Road, was basically known as the Tesmer Farm. They were relatives of the Travenacker family. Everything on the Madison Heights side, the Oakland County side, was owned by the Travenacker family, basically from 10 Mile Road, at that time it was almost, 10 Mile Road to 13 Mile Road. Then you had the Harkey family, owning the other portions. The largest pig farm in the state was at 14 Mile in John R. And so this is where it all began and where it developed from. And of course, again, Jenny Solberg, if anybody could call the mother of Madison Heights, would have to be Jenny Solberg. I guess the father would be John B. Macrina. Even though a lot of people contributed to this, Vern Pebley, Frank Cagle, Harry Young, these are the old-timers. Once again, Daryl Davis, Richard Riley, Bill Gravel, Jake Ancona, Ralph Bryson. And the first job that they gave me was Mr. Frank Cagle, may not remember. They made me Justice of the Peace. I served 3 hours and resigned.
And resigned? Was it that awful?
That bad. Frank Cagle was the was our liaison man with the police department, even though theoretically we did not have a police department. So Frank was the police department and the only person that could get deputized by the sheriff's department to control the crime in Madison Heights today.
Well, Frank, your title when you were elected was constable. What kind of duties were you expected to perform as constable?
As constable, I did all the paperwork, searched the servant subpoenas and so forth, and warrants, serving the warrants, and they turned the warrants over to the constable, and then we take them out and serve them. And that went on quite a while. I had to handle, because of some of the other men that was elected, there was two constables. One of them couldn't attend court because of obligations to his job. And so I more or less did all of the jury, picking the jurors, and all of this was dumped into my lap. But now it's different. It's done by the state on a drawing from the registered voters. Mm-hmm. So they don't have to do that anymore. Going into the court, Judge Lawrence was our first municipal judge, wasn't it? And he never was out of office. He filled a full time of the his time with the city as judge. And the district court came in. The constables had no more authority, such as court work. Mm-hmm. So they appointed me court officer. And I went from there on into a couple of 3 years ago, I had to retire on account of my health. Mm-hmm. I remember when we used to have the court, and police department all in the old building down there on John R. And they went in and did the basement over, the coal bin where they used to have. Mm-hmm. And that's where the judge sat in down there, and the jurors would have to take them in for deliberating.
Frank, I think you should mention, too, that the first justice of the peace and the judge here for all those years was Hendrik Smit. And the other first constable elected with you, of course, was our friend Paul Bonk, who's deceased, whose daughter today is married to Bernie Macrina in our police department.
Yes, yes, that's right, Bill. And I remember, too, I said that Paul Bonk, I didn't say Paul Bonk, but I did say that I had to have two constables. Mm-hmm. And Paul had a job with the
Consumers
Power, and he could not service doing jury trials, so I had to do all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, back then, there wasn't enough paperwork to keep one guy busy, but mm-hmm. the charter called for two constables. And I went on doing that on into the new buildings up north of 13 Mile Road, and when I retired. But I do remember that Bill here has been very, very much indeed working all the time on the city. I know Bill has did a lot of footwork in Lansing to get different grants for the city. I know he did a lot on that high rise, is Bill. He worked with Jim Solberg on that and got that through. In fact, I could sit here all day if I had time to take it over and tell you things that Bill has done for the city. And sometimes some people think that when a guy gets out of the eyes of the public, such as city work and what have you, that they're all done for. But Bill is still going, trying to do more for the city. And I really appreciate his help and everything. I know that he was tied up pretty well in Lansing there for quite a few years, and I don't think he was ever defeated as a state office at all. He never lost election.
I knew when to leave, Frank.
So I think that's being very, very modest, because your support here has been always very strong. One of the things that I've heard mentioned is that when the facilities on John R. became very small, I think there's a picture in one of the library scrapbooks that the library had to, in essence, close when the space was needed for a hearing. They show a picture of little kids in their picture books waiting while somebody is giving testimony, or it's being used as a courtroom until the case was finished, and then they could go back to the shelves and finish selecting their materials. But when the move came to build the current Civic Center, how well was that received, Bill, here in town?
Mm-hmm. We'll go back to the first library. It's true, it was in the basement of the old Township Hall on John R. until they had the flood in 55 or 6. This ruined everything in the basement, and that was the end of the library facilities, period, for the then Royal Oak Township, now mm-hmm. Last Nights. So when it became a city, the city then entered into an agreement with the Madison School District, which was heavily populated, about 5,000 enrollment, and the Lanphier District, which had 122, and incidentally, Mrs. Jackson, Lon Jackson's mother, was teaching at that time and has taught all of our children to the school. So that the facilities were just absolutely terrible. We found out, number one, that you couldn't get fire insurance in Royal Oak Township or the then Madison Heights, because we had no fire plugs, we had no fire engines, we had no police departments, basically, and no service areas of any kind. And so that it was proposed by the so-called leaders in the group, and we call them the Good Government Group, remember, Frank, that we needed these facilities and services. And so when the new council was elected, they had so much to do that you couldn't spread it out over a period of time, and so the general public just could not accept the fact that we were going to have garbage refuse, and you no longer could throw it on John, all right? That you had to have library facilities for our kids, because they had to travel all the way to Royal Oak Library, that you the Oakland County Sheriff's Department was providing basically the police protection, and through our deputy sheriff, which was then Frank Cagle and Paul Bunk. And so there was a great need for these services. We had one employee when they first started, and it was Mrs. Chamberlain, who was the old township clerk. Mrs. Chamberlain, after the first council was elected, decided to hire another assistant clerk, and her name was Dorothy Lentz. And Dorothy came in and became the deputy city clerk. Today, I guess the city started or thereabout.
That's right. Mrs. Chamberlain retired, I think, and she took over from there and did a wonderful job so far.
So over the years, to answer your question, that each mayor and council then learned from that bad experience, and each then would do certain things. It was very difficult when you did not have any streets paved or any sewers in or any of the other public services. So that each council and mayor then, coming up through the years, starting with Lloyd Ferguson and then George Harkey, Leroy Ainsley, and then it was Ted Crenn, and then it was Bill Huffman, and then it was Herb Smith, and then it was George Serez, prior to that Jenny Solberg. Each one standing unit then would add the necessary services as the dollars became available. I have to give a lot of credit to our congressman at that time, and still my dear close personal friend today, Bill Broomfield. He got us the money to initiate the Civic Center today, as you know it, on 13 Mile, which is the City Hall, the police station, the fire station, the public library, and the court. From those services, Bill Broomfield, at that time I left local government, went to Lansing, and Bill Broomfield helped us get the money to cover the 12-town drain, which was a $50 million project at that time. Today would be $200 million. He helped us get the money for the parks, for the fire department. We got the first grant for the police station, and on and on and on. And Bill Broomfield has been our dear friend all of these years and assisted all of the people in this area as a result of that. Jenny Solberg, in my opinion, Virginia dedicated her whole life to this community. They had the first restaurant, gave all their monies and their talents to her family and to the people in this community. And that's why I'm pleased today that they can name the high-rise tower after Virginia Solberg as her landmark for what she contributed to this community, and on and on and on, many others.
Well, now, there have been a variety of newspapers that have served the area. Right now we have the Madison Heights Weekly, which is somewhat of a misnomer since it's really a biweekly, but it's there. And we've had the Reporter and a number of guises. But before that, and it was still in existence in 79 when I came here, was a paper called the Madison News. Mm-hmm. And I think that the company that produced that also produced like the Hazel Park News or something like that. And a couple
Reporter.
Of yeah.
Reporter.
Right.
But the main newspaper at that time was the Hazel Park, Ferndale, Madison Heights Gazette. In Ferndale, it was the Gazette, and Hazel Park, it was the News, and the Madison Heights, it was News, and Wilma Waldron was the editor. And the people provided the necessary circulation. It was a weekly paper at that time. Later on, the Tribune, the Rollo Tribune, which was always in existence, but was more sophisticated, they seemed to be west of Campbell Road. But they needed a whipping boy, since they could not write bad articles about Royal Oak or Birmingham, and so Madison Heights became the hot political bed of the county. All the wrongdoings and so forth were supposed to be in Madison Heights. All the good doings were supposed to be in the other county. It was quite a turbulent time, and then during that period they started several other newspapers. None were successful, of course, as a result of that.
Well, the News lasted a long time. Now, did Virginia work with
yes.
any of those or serve anyone?
Virginia Solberg was the editor of the Madison News, and Wilma Walden was the editor of the Hazel Park Ferndale Gazette and News. Right?
Okay.
Mary Klemensky was the associate editor.
I know back then, Bill, this city of Hazel Park and the city of Royal Oak. I understood if we hadn't went for a charter and got it passed at the time, they were going to take off a hunk of Madison Heights. And at this time, us going to the city, I know our first charter was down because of them giving a piece of land on the camel to Royal Oak.
Right.
And this here become quite a fight we had to go through with another. Anybody thinks this was easy making Madison Heights a city, they're crazy. Because we worked day and night at it, and I know Bill here did, and most of the others. Of course, I was quite young then, and had the service station, run 24-hour service. And I would be available at all times for help. I had my little crew together, when such as we had a sign on the post saying, vote yes on the charter.
Mm-hmm.
We came out of a place we was meeting at over on our first judge there. What was his name, Bill?
Henrik Smith.
No, the other. He got elected first associate judge.
Williams. I wasn't going to mention that.
I got the story you think. But anyhow, we was over there one morning quite late going over some brain work to get work done in the city. Someone came in and says, they're tearing down our signs. I says, they are? Yeah. So what did we do? I got my old gang together and their rakes. And we went around and, when we could, we put a vote yes on the charter. They had put a little slip of paper there that had made say vote no on the charter. It was just that easy to do away with. And so we covered the whole city, but daylight the next morning we had them all covered. We would really have to work hard because we had them against us. Not only that, I don't think Hazel Park and Royal Oak helped us any because they wasn't too well satisfied with us going to the city ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
But at this time, we won the first election that we had, that's such as a charter, okay. And Bill here, he didn't run the first time, but he worked harder for not running than did if he run. So he worked hard. I'll say we had a good bunch of guys running for this here deal. But the second election came up, all of them got wiped out but me and Bill. We was the only ones elected in the second election. That's a good government group.
Mm-hmm.
Now, have you know that we had back in glory in the second election, but they came out with George Hork and his group, I have to put that in there, came out with just what you call it, hand-printed signs, vote yes or vote no, passing them around all over. They didn't spend no money at all, and they beat every one of them. In our group, but me and Bill Hoffman, we were still election officials. But we had, it was fun. I'm glad we're our city anyhow, and it served me well.
Now, how long, somebody has a picture that they say was taken at about the time that Madison Heights was created of an old sawmill that was here in the city. Where was that?
It's on the... It was on the property north of Gardenia. There was a big field in there, and that's where we had the sawmill at that time. We could get the excess lumber. I have the documentation. I have at my home, if anyone ever is interested in it, the dates, the names, the photographs, and all of the media at that time, and for all of those years from the day we started till this point. So if anyone was ever be interested in specific dates and pictures, mm-hmm. and so forth. One bit of history there, Frank, I remember now, the reason that the first charter failed is the township board gave away that, as you pointed yeah. out, that section of Royal Oak from Campbell Road to Stevenson Highway, which is now I-75,
yeah.
they would give away pieces. And once you would incorporate, you had to define in principle, by leaps and bounds, the area that you were incorporating.
Mm-hmm.
Every time we'd file a petition, they would give away a 5 or 10 acres here or 10 or 20 acres there. Which screwed the thing up for several years. 3 years, as a matter of fact.
Well, this hits me as no surprise because, you know, our friend George Horkey was an attorney, and he knew what he was doing. Tried to defeat us. He did a pretty good job of it, but not for long.
The crime capital of the state of Michigan was Rollo Township. All the numbers, the prostitution, and everything you could dream of at that time. And so consequently that we learned that many people had an interest in this remaining as it was.
Oh, I see.
For example, City of Rollo, it was not in their best interest, and many of the other cities and on and on and on.
Well, now the... once the city was going and was operating, you mentioned that residents suddenly, it dawned on them that there was going to have to be a dollar paid in order to support some of these things or to make the changes, and they weren't exactly pleased about that. But how much support was there for something such as the covering of the Red Run to make it a drain? I mean, was that...
well,
how did that fit into the priorities at the time?
I remember they let me make the presentation with the Tribune, with Russell and Jack Sinclair, who is today the chief aide to Bill Broomfield, mm-hmm. and Rudy DeFazio, who today I think is the vice president of Blue Cross. But they allowed me to handle the numbers, and our first budget was $90,000, of which, as a township, you do not receive monies back from the state and the federal government. You must be a municipality. And so when we got the first dollars in, it was adequate, except that when you start out with nothing, and then you ask the general public, we'd like for you to pay a dollar a month, I recall, for example, for garbage. And he says, no, then those people just threw it on the streets. And you ask them to pay a dollar a month for police protection, and they refused. And so it was that kind of a very poor area at that time. I don't think there was a home in Madison Heights worth $10,000 at that time, or 12, or something like that.
Yes, we had the co-op in Madison Heights, North 13. It was quite well. They have hard their garbage taken away and everything. They have their own city waters with a well there.
Speaking of co-op, excuse me, Frank, one of the original people in our group we failed to mention was Arthur Tancredi.
That's right. Which would say more or less Mrs. Tancredi did right. Most of the work, but Arthur go along for the ride.
Another point of interest, if the tape is not out, Frank Lloyd Wright came to Rollo Township 39 years ago. And you probably noticed the other day that the movie star, his granddaughter was Ann Baxter, just expired. But Frank Lloyd Wright came and developed the co-op, which is today being abutted on 13 Mile Road by the Senior Citizens Towers and the new Wave swimming pool that's going in. And that was the high-class co-op home area in Madison Heights or Rollo Township at that time. But Frank Lloyd Wright laid out the streets and developed it, as you're probably aware, and built all of those homes in there.
Well, I think Fred Hiller was one of the original
right.
people in the co-op.
Forgot to mention, excuse right. me again, so you get to talk. Fred Hiller was one of the original people. I can remember a meeting we said we should consolidate the Madison and Lanphier School District, and... I think Lanphier had about 100 people in it at that time, and all the people were in Madison. And so we weren't able to get them to join hands. Now, of course, years later, the state will see to it that they do join hands in one district.
Well, Fred had mentioned the connection with Frank Lloyd Wright and the fact that Wright had great plans for a house that people could afford even during the
Depression.
War and the Depression because of... The materials were supposed to be simple and didn't put a proper foundation under it. And when the first Michigan spring came, the house crumbled crumbled back to earth from which it had come, which I thought was intriguing. And in which part of the city were you living in at the time, Frank?
In the South End.
In the South End?
Yes.
And you're still there?
I'm still there, but I'll tell you, our city in the South End needs a lot of improvements. Mm. I've got on the police department. We've got ordinances, and they're not working them, they're not upholding them. There's junk cars, driveway right now next to my house there. A guy's got one of these boom buggies sitting out there with a trailer right in his front yard. This is absolutely a no-no. Mm-hmm. So until these people get out there and it's, the council said the week before last, no meeting before this last one, that they're going to have to start working on those violations. Mm-hmm. And otherwise, backyard next to me has got two junkers sitting in the backyard. Anytime a car is banded like that and doesn't have license on it, it's to be towed away or else make the guy get rid of it. And it's just that easy. But you go down in Detroit, you'll hit places in Detroit that's got nothing but junkyards on in their yards and getting by with it. But out here, we haven't got that much ground to cover that they shouldn't be able to go around and serve these papers. I know because I served a lot of the warrants on these people when I was in there. And they're just not getting off the fanny and getting out and doing it. That's the way I feel about it. And I wish they would do it because our city at the south end is going to become a dump if they don't enforce them.
I think that was one of the areas that had to, the people didn't understand at the beginning of the city were the changes that were going to happen as a result of being a city versus the township. When did they actually begin having their own police officers? Now, in the beginning, you pointed out that we counted on Frank being deputized to do some things. How long did it take us to have the beginnings of our own police force?
At the beginning of the city, we had a small group police work cops. And a lot of the police officers got scared to death that they were going to lose their jobs. So they went elsewhere. I remember Tom Linville, he's just retired from the city. He was in my place there dozens of times, just scared to death that he's going to lose his job. And I told him, no. I says, in fact, no one would have had left their job. They wasn't getting rid of nobody.
Well, basically what happened, Frank, was that the black officers and some white officers stayed with Rollo Township. And basically the six officers that stayed over here and joined this force was Chief Richardson.
All right, well, now, you had just pointed out when the tape flipped that Harry Young had to get a loan so that the city could meet its payroll, and that was to include six officers at the time then that we became the city?
I think we only had four at the time, if I recall correctly.
Okay.
Harry Kendall, you forgot.
The two DPW people decided to stay with us, which was Hank. We had two DPW people and Myrtle Chamberlain decided to stay, in four policemen. So that was the new plan. John McQueen has served all that period as city manager, building inspector, for free. Until later on when Harry got the loan, they carried the government for 3 months. Then we got Bill Broomfield, who was then our state representative in Lansing, to get us a grant from the state to meet the basic primary functions of the community until they could adopt a tax code and get the government in order.
Okay, so then there was a gap in terms of the creation of the city and the actual ability to levy taxes and collect taxes. That can be frustrating, I imagine, trying to run the things.
Terrible.
Bill, do you remember we had two dog shelters in the city on Gardenia? Do you know where those were? What location?
Yeah.
That's something we've been trying to do with the outfit here, try to find out someone that knew who run them. Or
well, at the end of Gardenia, at the far end, was that big field back there, and that was the first dog shelter. And I guess they were selling them to the medical schools because they didn't get paid anything.
Yeah, that's right.
And Wallace was our first dog catcher, remember?
John Wallace.
And he worked for 6 months and didn't get a check, so he quit.
And the next one, he went to work for the city as dog catcher, and I hate to say this, but he was caught writing out violations on paper bags and what have you, and I turned them into the city.
It was a difficult period.
Yeah, it was.
Basically, what you've always had here over the years is the so-called South End, the old township, where the people felt, geez, my home is paid for, why should I pay for widening or paving of John Iron? And the demand was placed upon the general populace by the people that were moving from Highland Park and other areas to new land. Everybody wanted a home. You could come out here then and buy a beautiful brick home in the Carrum subdivision for $10,000. And so the North End began to develop, and the schools began to develop, and the businesses began to come in. But it was difficult to explain to people living here that you can't get anybody to come and open a business on 12 Mile Road if it's single lane full of holes. Or John Iron. And none of the side streets were paved or cleared. There was no snow removal. There were just no services, period. Mm-hmm. And it was a tough blow for the community to accept this when other communities, like Royal Oak, have been cities for years and years and years. Now here we are today, we have our main arteries all widened, we have good snow removal, we have good distance. Royal Oak needs 19 mills just to improve their street facilities. It's still a nice community, but it's they're like Ferndale and Hazel Park. They're feeling the effects. Incidentally, Hazel Park had just become a city, I think, about a year or two before us.
Yeah, before us, yes.
And Louis and Fred Elias, of course, and all the big boys. Louis was mayor, and I was mayor. Art Miller was the mayor, Warren, the singer. That's his son today, that's in Georgia. And Tom Welch, the old mayors from New York, came around here. The two of them came from that friend.
We had one fellow there that did quite a bit for the city, Ferguson, at the bar at 10 Mile and John R. He was always in there dipping in his tail to help the city along. He worked hard for us. And I guess we could go along and say a lot of people worked hard for us if we just get down and think it over.
Mm-hmm.
Because no two or three men made this a city. It was hard.
No, it was a
every foot of it was hard.
Well, now, was the lumber company on John R. in existence at that time?
Jim's Lumber.
Yeah. Incidentally, Jim had just had a stroke, Frank, and he's over in the nursing home. Jim Cruz, Ralph Bryson, Mike Herzina. Mike Herzina owned the tool company. Johnny Bishan just recently died.
Sure.
Jake Ancona, Mike Fergersky, which is Ferguson. These are about the only business people we had in the whole town. And every time we wanted something, they would give us the money, whether it be a phone bill or a needy family. We had the largest Goodfellas organization in the state of Michigan at that time because we had more poor people.
Mm-hmm.
Over the years in Lansing, I was always able to point it to say everybody. I had the richest school district in the state, and I had the poorest school district in the state. So that every time we needed something back in those days, it was contributory. It was contributed by various people. Contractors, for example, put in, that's where I got some difficulty years later, had the contractors put in the ball field at St. Denis, St. Vincent, put in their water, put in their sewer. None of them could afford that then. So the contractors were here putting in 12 town, and I says, hey, put on the street there and help those churches out a little bit. Put some field dirt in there, put some sewers in there, put some new drapes in there, put some ball teams out there. It was a very contributory kind of community because it seemed like everybody was sort of poor. And again, coming back, we had six major business people who contributed most of the money for everything. We had no legal bills. We didn't have anything because everything was paid for. Mostly contributory. Good people here. You've got good, strong people in this community over these years. Even in the township days, those people were good people. They contributed greatly to the community. None of this would be here today if it did not encompass the voluntary contribution of hundreds and hundreds of people to make this all possible today. As Frank pointed out, maybe there's a few things here we have our shortcomings with.
You could talk all day, Bill, if you wanted to, on if we could just think of the things happened.
But basically, this is a very young city. What is it, 20, starting from
30.
30 years old. How many communities 30 years old that have very little bonded indebtedness? Almost everything is paid for. We have good professional people in the community now running the city. We have good services, excellent services. We have a good relationship with the county, City of Detroit, and the state. our services are excellent, and yet it's very modest compared to some of our communities to the north. The per capita library cost is probably one of the lowest. The per capita police cost is one of the lowest. The DPW, the snow removal. All you have to do is look at the kind of services in a community that's only been here 30 years and started out dead broke. Now, how many people get married or married 30 years and tell me they saved $10,000? Not any if they're sending kids to school.
I was laughing the other night. I was listening to the council meeting on the TV, and they brought up the deal that they needed a branch picker or something to cut the limbs that's hanging out over the street, and they needed a truck and equipment. $47,000. Now I thought, my God, what would have done that if they hit us without it?
Well, we used to do all that work voluntarily. Of course, it's changed. People demand more today, and I got to give credit to the township people that George Horkey was a very smart man and great foresight. Leroy Ainsley contributed immensely to the community and still lives here. Then we may as well place ourselves in that old age group. Frank, you and I, and John McCrina, and Art Sulahowski. I failed to mention one of the mainstays in the community was Art Sulahowski, Mike Rosina, Ralph Bryson, and Jim Cruz. And so that each year, each mayor and council became a little bit more sophisticated and a little less squabbling. I can say today that the community is very happy with our mayor and the council, the way they conduct themselves publicly and privately. They're working very well together. Our services are excellent. Our schools are very, very good. And you must consider we have one of the richest school districts in the state, which is Lamphere. Right adjacent to it is one of the poorest, Madison. And both have developed students. One of them is president of Xerox Corporation today. Several of them have become great professional athletes, and on at what has materialized and come out of this quagmire that really nobody thought we had any chance whatsoever of building this community. And again, most of the credit I have to give to the voluntary contribution. Jenny Solberg spent 60 hours a week for free working for the city. Frank Cable, Paul Bonk, Ernie McCrean, on and on. If there's only one thing I could point out that's lacking in the city today is a voluntary contribution. For example, we would have a library drive. We didn't have any books back then. We'd have a drive, we'd pick up 1,500 books. Be lucky if we could reclaim 500 of them. Mm-hmm. So you had a real voluntary contribution. We had a volunteer fire department, a volunteer police department. We're too sophisticated today to go back to those, but we need to reinstitute the voluntary commitment that made this community what it is.
I know that two or three of the fellows on that were on that fire department, the volunteer, one of them was Mrs.
Solberg's brother.
Yeah, Mrs. Solberg's brother.
Joyce.
He was hired in by the city, but prior to the city, he was two or three good guys I know was on there, and now it's all paid. Mm-hmm. I do know that before the city bill, we had very little north of the 12 mile road.
Right.
It's been all built in there since the city, most of it. I don't say all of it, but the majority. We've got all of these huge manufacturers out here that's really paying into the tax roll. Mm-hmm. And it's really hip. We've got some beautiful businesses out in this end.
Well, that was brought about, of course, by the I-96. The first meeting we had, they wanted to bring the I-96 across South Oakland County. Now, this was 29 years ago when I approved the route, and knowing that the accessibility to the community is the most important thing, same way with the I-75. This group of people accepted the expressway of the I-75. We didn't force them to make curves or this or that, or you must put up barriers. We accepted it because we knew you had to have good transportation facilities for community to grow. And Madison Heights was the first city to approve the I-75, I-96 route. Several other communities adjacent to this, through court proceedings, increased the cost of those two projects hundreds of millions of dollars by saying that, no, we don't want the incinerator in our town. It was not going to be accepted. The 14 cities, which is one of my clients today in Lansing, I represent all the cities and the Rubbish and Water Authority, nobody wanted the incinerator. Madison says, well, okay, we'll take it. So we have today the refuse of the 14 adjacent cities. It's not a detriment, like most people thought it would be. They've donated land back for parks. We have a golf course on it now. It's covered. We're now going to have a new Wave Tech swimming pool, thanks to a lot of people. But Madison Heights was a good neighbor. It was a better neighbor than some of the neighbors were to Madison Heights. I got to give a lot of credit to Harry Young's legal firm at that time, who worked for practically nothing for all those years. And I noticed the other day in the newspaper where they're charging me $80 an hour. I pay $150 an hour in my legal services for my two companies in Lansing. And Madison Heights is getting legal services, I think, for $80 an hour, whatever the case might be. But they don't remember the man worked for a year for nothing. Les Katinsky, who has been a big contributor to this community, worked for years in this community for nothing. A lot of good people here.
I think the city council just give the attorneys a raise. I think it's 25%.
$80 an hour.
Yeah.
Which is half of what I pay for legal services.
Well, it's like that, Bill. You have a guy like Harry Young in there that's done so much for the city of Madison Heights. And there's always a couple of picky-pickies in there that don't like so-and-so, so-and-so forth. And it's all politics. It's not because Harry isn't doing his job.
No. It's been a great community.
I understand he might retire not too long away.
Speaking personally, I might mention that I raised four kids in this wonderful community and sent all four of them through the school system here and through college, and they all reside in Madison Heights except one, which will be moving back in
soon. I can copy that, Bill. We have nine.
Frank's son served on our common council in town. I don't know if you know that or not.
Charlie
Cagle. He raised a big family in this town. His daughter is very active on the school board in Madison. And we have deep roots here.
Yes, we do.
Good community.
I just hope that things turn out for the best from here out, and I think they will, because we've got some pretty smart people on the council. We've got more hens on the council. I just thinking, not too long ago, we fought like heck to get Jen Salberg in there. Now they've got three women on the council.
The first time, if you have another minute on the tape, the first time Jenny Salberg ran, it was unheard of for a woman to be elected to office in those days. It just was unheard of. We had an extremely difficult time, and Jenny was the most knowledgeable person in city and county government ever served in this community. And it was very difficult to get her elected to the council. And then she ran for mayor and became, many of our friends would say, I can't vote for Jenny. She's the best, most qualified, but she's a woman. Nothing pleases me more today than to see that we have three very capable women that I've known for many years serving on our common council. And that shows you the maturity of the community, that we've accepted and grown that much in stature that we now have. And then these women serving, they have something to offer. And my wife is a better bookkeeper than I am. She's a better person than I am in many, many ways. She sees things differently than I see them. And so I think it shows the progress of the community, really to their credit, that they have done these things.
That's a good note, I think, for us to come to a close on.
Thank you, Mark.
It's nice to have an up at the end of a session. And I really appreciate Frank Cagle coming today and Bill Huffman. It's an honor, I think, for the Historical Commission to be able to speak with both of you and to have this recorded and to add to our archives. And so, gentlemen, thank you. Have a good holiday. And it's been a real pleasure having you.
Thank you, Michael.